Ready or not?
Ladies and gentlemen, today, the process died. After 35 glorious years podcasting together, a freak hive mind accident has robbed this world of our three glorious co-hosts. Curtis Weeb will be remembered for many things, but most of all for making the world's first sequential grilled cheese sandwich. Jeremy Holt leaves a lasting legacy of the monumental comic creator social networking app he created, Collaborate My Style. And Ryan K. Lindsay, after much searching, was found in the middle of Australia, surrounded by thousands of pages of what appears to be just the one Daredevil tale. These pioneers will be missed as their show opened up the writing process to the masses, as they discussed their successes and failures, and brought in guests of the highest caliber. No subject was taboo as they talked openly about premature adjectival dysfunction, MacGuffin envy, and the dreaded ongoing lurgy. As a tribute to these fine fellows, we have dug around in the vault and procured one of the rarest and best episodes from early in their travels. Today is a sad day, ladies and gentlemen, but stay tuned for a blast from the past as we relive the process 2012 style. Hey guys, how you going?
Good.
That was unexpected. I feel like I've had a bit of a shiver. I'm shivering, and I don't know why. I feel like this is an important episode, and we should knock it out of the park.
Yeah, in the future, I feel like people are going to listen to this one again, so we better really bring our A down.
It is number 13 after all.
It's been far too long, guys. We've had a large gap. I don't know if you guys have received much, but I've received the odd tweet, DM, Facebook message, and email saying, when are we getting the next episode? And I keep saying to these people, oh, we've got a Sensation Spectacular coming up. And they're like, no. We want to hear about the boring stuff you guys talk about. When is it coming? So it's been really nice that people have missed us.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it has been over 2 months. Just probably just a combination of a few things. And my schedule has definitely been part of the problem. I've been absolutely swamped. And the last month has been kind of right off writing-wise, which I'll talk about in the progress report. But yeah, it's definitely good to sit down and chat again. We've been doing a lot of these Sensation Spectaculars, which are great. But I mean, we're almost caught up with the Sensation Spectaculars with our own episodes now.
Yep.
It's a bit crazy that that side seems to be looming larger, and we've got so many more guests just in the pipeline waiting to come on, which is pretty cool.
Which is good, but
definitely good. Excellent.
But we need to make time for ourselves, boys. We need to pleasure ourselves.
Exactly. Thanks. Well, since it's been a while, we probably have a lot of stuff we want to talk about in the progress report. We'll do a quick wow factor. I've already told the boys beforehand. I didn't have time to kind of sort through what I'd read and since the last. The one thing that I did read that I was impressed with, I bought the trade for Animal Man. And I'm not going to go into a lot of details. I just was really impressed with it, mainly because I really like the really grotesque kind of body Cronenberg body horror that they do in it. There's a lot of really uncomfortable stuff, which I always find really interesting. And I think Travel Foreman really, really ramped up the queasy factor on it. So I really enjoyed that. I thought the first trade was really good. Don't know if I'll get the next one, but it is probably the one of the books that I enjoyed the most since our last show. So Ryan, how about you?
I recently attended the comic convention in Sydney, Supernova, and David Mack was there, who is a comic creator. He's got his series Kabuki, which has been going for 20 years now, he informed me. And he also did a sweet set of runs on Daredevil. So I got him to do a Daredevil ink sketch for me, and holy shit, that is the definition of wow. Standing there and watching him with just an ink pot, just slapping it on the page. And I had this big discussion while he did it about how hard it must be to be so confident in an ink line, to just slap it on there. And it's a mixture between he's pretty confident in his ability, and his ability is pretty quality, so I guess he should be. But I guess he's just at ease now that, if the ink moves a millimeter to one side, whatever, like – It was exciting to watch him work, that he can just effortlessly throw it down. And the sketch in the end was unbelievably good. I showed it to a bunch of people around the con, and they were blown back by it. Even people who are not sort of Daredevil fans, just the pure quality of the ink on paper was astounding. And it was only 50 hardcore Australian dollars. So it was a bargain. So yeah, watching him work, absolutely a wow for me.
And just for everyone out there, 50 Australian dollars is roughly about 50 cents American. So just to give you an idea of the economy over there. So
I'll have you know the Australian dollar has risen above your – oh, no, you're Canadian. I don't know how we're sitting with yours. We don't even bother comparing to the Canadian – you guys have dollars? Is it just grilled cheese sandwiches? I don't know what you've got.
We have a barter system here. It's basically a courtesy in exchange for goods.
Now you have money that smells like maple syrup.
Right, ooh, right. I forgot about that.
So.
That's why your back pocket always smells so good, Kurt. I could have been down there recently, but, you know, I hear things.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, on that note, Jeremy, drop some wow.
I would have to say that I was really impressed with Rachel Deering's Anathema, which some people would know through her Kickstarter, which raised over $20,000. I was obviously hesitant.
Has it finished the Kickstarter?
Yeah, it funded.
Yeah, it has finalized. Nice.
I was really impressed with the story and you know the art by Chris Mooneyham was also really good. What wowed me was that you know Rachel had this vision for this book and she made it anyway. And you know I can see how it would be a hard sell to pitch to someone, but as a completed book, you know it really has a fan base, and I think people I think resonated with the fact that she had a story, wanted to tell it, and people want to support that story. And, you know, I support it. I think it's a great little story. And I think that, you know, the first issue I had spoken to her briefly through Twitter, and she was telling me that the first issue is by far the least impressive of the series, which I think is going to be 6 issues, which is exciting because I was actually quite impressed with the first issue. And it's just nice to see someone, you know, just following through without, you know, the need to be backed by a publisher or have some kind of, you know, and it's also really difficult to do this, to get an art team assembled to complete an issue with no promise of anything. So, yeah.
She's put together a very successful just campaign and situation for herself. It's nice to see it pay off.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into some progress that we've been doing, boys. It's, as Kurt said, it's been about 2 months. It's been a long time. I can only hope we've all made some progress. Jeremy, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. I guess the overview is that I'm working on 6 different projects right now in various stages 6 of development. Yeah.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, all of them have at least the first issue written, if not all of them, or if not half of them. So I'm kind of ahead of the curve. The most notable one, I guess, is Southern Dog, which was picked up by 215 Inc., which is a small press publisher out of Philadelphia. I just found out that I was talking to the editor the other day, and he's going to have a small print run of about 100 copies available for me to sell at their booth at New York Comic Con. Nice. I just linked up with my... Yeah. And the most exciting thing is that I just talked to my local comic book shop last night. They had a release party, and the owner, I mentioned it to him, and he's like, yeah, he said, just let's firm up a date for maybe close to New York Comic Con. Obviously, there are going to be bigger names wanting to come through, but you know, maybe we can slot you in for a release party for the first issue, maybe the weekend before or something. I was like, that would be amazing. So that's exciting. And then Cobble Hill is between publishers, but I think it might find a home once that stuff settles down. Working on a really exciting project with W. Scott Forbes, which is going well, and another with a new guy, Kevin Ziegler, who happens to be a really good friend of Trad Moore's, which is how I met him. Working a story called After Houdini, which is a kind of a retelling story of Houdini and the idea of him being a spy for American and British intelligence leading up to World War I. And I was asked to co-write a project with an image writer, which is exciting, so can't really discuss that. But just trying to still write, basically.
How far along is that one with the image writer?
I just sent him a plot synopsis last weekend, which he approved, and we're going to discuss it a little bit further. But yeah, it's just early development. Although he did send me a bunch of teaser images that he's already gotten done. He has the whole art team assembled and everything.
That sounds awesome, man.
Very cool.
I don't know how you go with juggling 6 projects. That's a lot of art coming in and a lot of creative teams to sort of administer over. It's that's got to be a lot of time, I would assume, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of slow burns, though. Like, there are some projects that are taking, like, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's a lot of juggling, but, yeah, it's keeping me busy. There was I had a slow period of maybe about a month or 6 weeks where I just wasn't seeing anything, and I, you know, was kind of wrapped up in some personal stuff that took me away from writing, so, but, you know, it's nice to just have things juggling, and it's fun to jump between projects to kind of get my brain thinking about other things instead of focused on one thing. So.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That, you know, by procrastinating, you're working on something else. You're always productive, which can be really cool.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Kurt, what have you been up to?
Well, the last month has basically seen me do no work whatsoever. Let's just put that out there right away.
Right.
I've actually kind of been going through a difficult phase in my life right now, and I took a week off. Not this week, but the week before. And I realized my girlfriend's sister and brother-in-law were in here visiting us. And they were going to be staying for the week. And they were staying at our place. And I was like, well, you know what? I got to work during the day. And we can all hang out in the evening kind of thing. And then I started working on Monday morning. And I just couldn't concentrate. I was like, I cannot work anymore. I don't know what's going on. So I just decided to take the week off. And I realized that was the first time I'd taken any time off. I actually completely disconnected from email. I gave kind of an email to, you know, all the people that needed to know what was going on, like just, hey, I'm taking a week off kind of thing. I was totally off of Twitter. And the first day I went through some like kind of separation anxiety, but that quickly disappeared after like a day. And then from there, it was just like, oh, God, I can't believe I've finally done this. But I realized that when I was taking that week off, that I hadn't taken a break in a year and a half. And when I mean that, I mean I have not taken a day off in a year and a half. And even last summer, I was still driving a bus, so I was working 80, 90 hours a week. And it's just been kind of this long, I guess, slow burn to where all of a sudden the month of June just like hit me like a freight train, and I couldn't be productive anymore. So that's kind of taken a bit of a chunk out of my productivity. But I, you know, I'm still happy with what's been happening the last, you know, few months since we did our last show. Grim Reaper 1 and 2 have come out, and I'm really, really happy with the fan response to that book. And, you know, we also had backups from Ryan. The second one came out, and that's been received really well. I don't know if you've read a lot of the reviews for it yet.
I've been checking out what I can, sort of thing, and yeah, I'm pleased that one, a lot of the reviews even mention the backup, because I know sometimes they get left off, but most of them have been really positive about it, and there's been a hell of a lot of tweets coming my way as well, just throwing a lot of support to that story. There was just one guy who was like, I don't like it because it's depressing. And I was like, all right, I aimed for a depressing story and I nailed it. You just didn't like it. Sweet.
Yeah, so we had you, and then, you know, there was a lot of response around that, which is great. And then Joey Esposito had the first backup, and that was also really well received, from a lot of fans and people that follow him. And so that was really exciting. And the first issue sold out, and I was really happy about that. And the nice thing about that is I actually finished that series completely. I finished writing that like a month and a half ago. So I'm just literally just kind of putting that aside. I'm still managing the project and doing what I have to for marketing, but that's actually been in the can for a while. So. Now it's just a matter of getting caught up with Panzerfaust and Debris, which I'm working with two artists that are extremely fast. Tyler's getting faster all the time.
Doesn't that suck when they start catching up to your script and you're just like, oh, man, I gotta work.
There's like this panic, you know. It's on your mind all the time. But it's just been I've been trying to manage a lot of projects while I'm preparing for my move to Vancouver. And that's going to be a pretty big life transition for me. It's, a couple thousand kilometers away, and it's a whole new city. It's a whole new start. And I have a really good, like really great job lined up. I'm really excited about it. But it's still a very large transition for me. So it's been a little bit overwhelming, definitely the last few months, but still like really happy to be where I'm at. I'm also going to San Diego Comic-Con, and that was definitely a last minute thing. I actually didn't want to go.
Really?
Yeah, I actually didn't really want to go. And my boss, who I'm moving to Vancouver to work with, He was booking my ticket because I'm going out there just to work for a couple weeks before I move there. And he's booking my ticket and he sends me a text message. He's like, hey, I'm going to book you and you come to San Diego with me. And I was like, no, I don't really want to. He texts me again. Come on, like, it'll be a good time. Just please come. I was like, nah. And then the third time he's like, look, I'm paying for it. I'll cover your flight and I'll take you there. It'll be a good time. I was like, he's looking at my boss. How many times can I tell him no before he's like, this guy's an idiot? So I was like, I gotta go. Not only is he paying for it, but he's my boss. So basically, we're actually going to be at the Image table now. The people that I've been doing work for, the Sky Pirates, they actually had a series come out with Image Comics a few years ago. So they're going to be there as a presence promoting their comics / their video game. And I'll just be there at the table helping that and then selling my own stuff as well. So I'll be at the Image table all weekend. So I think it'll be pretty fun to see, you know, all the Image people again. Not really thrilled with the con itself. I'm really conned out at this point, but it'll still be a good experience. But that's about it. I've just been really struggling to keep up with my projects. And I'm going to give a little bit of advice to people. It's really good to have a really, like, you know, set a really high goal for yourself. Like, you know, I want to have, you know, this many comics come out within a year. And I think for me, I set the goal. I wanted to have 3 comics come out within 1 calendar year. And I managed to get 5, which is really awesome. But there's also a reality that you have to be able to do it. And that's definitely been catching up to me, where I just have not been able to manage those because I also have to have a kind of a freelancing. So I have to have paid work done as well, and try to balance those. What comes as a priority can be very stressful, especially if you're a freelance writer. So if you're going to do that with your life, just really be aware of what your capacity is and don't overdo it, because it can really have some long-term health effects. So that's my last bit of advice from my progress report. I mean, lots of things going on, but my brain's pretty scrambled, so I'm just going to leave it at that. How about you, Ryan?
I got to agree with you on the end there. Yeah, that's why I'm, like, amazed that Jeremy can have 6 on the go, and I know his are sort of staggered. Well, I know yours. Sorry, you're still here, Jeremy. I know yours. Yeah. Are sort of staggered. But, I mean, it's such an astounding amount. I look at sort of what I've got going on, and, like, I don't know, maybe I'm psychically linked with Kurt, because I just recently had a little bit of a minor meltdown as well, where I was just looking at everything that I have to do and then everything that I'm trying to do and then everything else that I want to do, and I just realized there weren't enough hours in the day. And trying to factor in time, you know, to be yourself and to be a mate and to be a husband and to be a father, and then I have the day job of being a teacher, and I can step away from really none of those things. And then I had to look to the next step and say, all right, well, the extras that I'm putting on are I'm acting in an assistant principal role and I'm trying to write a whole bunch of different stuff. And I'm just going through a process now of trying to align what will actually fit and what I can make happen. And one thing that it's done is it's tightened up my productivity, where I'm trying to make sure that I am really, every time I sit to the computer, I'm working like 110%. I felt I was working hard before, and I feel like I've got to, like, up it now and make sure that I'm getting stuff done at all times. And even still, it's such a stretch, and you feel like every hour of the day is accounted for. And I mean, Kurt, you doing that for 18 months, and I see you online, you interact with fans on boards and stuff, like you set up such a good fan base because you are so available. But you're right, doing that can be very taxing.
Yeah,
and so
for
it's
sure.
It's finding that balance that, I don't know, I've been sort of just trying to make sure, then I've been keeping up with doing lists and making sure I prioritize, so that as soon as I sit down, I know exactly what I have to do next, and trying to set it up. And yeah, while we've been off the air, I've been wickedly busy. And I think the last time we spoke, I just wasn't able to announce it. The publisher sent me an email like 3 hours later and said, yeah, talk crazy about it. And we'd already recorded. So I want to talk about the ongoing comic that I've got launching next year. So for those who may not know, and I don't know how much it's been put out there on Twitter and what have you, are we having an ongoing comic starting with Action Lab Entertainment? And Action Lab, massively known at the moment because of their comic Princeless, which is Eisner nominated, and it swept the Glyph Awards, and it's a fantastic book. And so they've got an ongoing concept, and basically I was brought in kind of like a showrunner is the way I've sort of viewed it, because it's not my concept. It was something that was brought to them by somebody else that sort of wasn't going to write it. And so they thought of me for the project and attached me to it. And so now I'm in charge. and I still have editorial above me, but it's been really cool sort of working, you know, to their deadlines within their parameters. And we're going to launch in around March next year. So that means I'll be attending Emerald City and hopefully have a table as well. And we'll have the first issue out, and we'll be doing like a really big push launch for it at ACCC. So I'm so stoked about that.
That's awesome, man. We get to finally meet in person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Because I know you two guys will be there. So when they started mentioning, oh, we should do a con around March, I was like, oh, I know a con around March. All right, let's make this happen. So
yeah,
I've already locked in with the lady in charge around the house. And
that's exciting, man.
She said, yep, let's do it. Let's start looking at flights. So I'll be coming across solo next year. And I'm really keen to put this project out there as well, because it's really exciting. I think it's a really cool concept. And I know we've got tight little stories. And I vigorously with the editor sat down and we planned out like this whole ongoing map to the point where I know the last page sort of thing. And so now we're just setting about, you know, making comics. So I'm in the process of writing script issue 3 right now. I've nearly finished the first major draft of that and patching together everything that I've written. The first two scripts have gone through editorial and been approved. The artist has done the pencils on the first, I think, 15 pages of issue 1. And it looks awesome. I'm working with Daniel J. Logan on there, who did the backup in Grim Leaper for me.
Right.
Excellent.
Fantastic artist. I love Daniel. So we're working really well, and the pages he's churning out, some really solid stuff. We're still trying to finalize a colorist, but otherwise the entire production team is set in stone. And the Action Lab policy is that the book must be completed when it's solicited. So we don't solicit unless we've got full pages, everything finished.
Nice.
So it means we really need to get ahead. So if issue 1 is being solicited in, let's say, November, December, that issue has to be put to bed by then. And I mean, that's months away. So we've given ourselves a lot of lead time. So that's why I'm scripting issue 3. I've planned issue 4 out in 22 beats. And I've got the whole ongoing plan, but I'm starting to break down the next few little arcs. It's a different experience. All of a sudden, you're making comics to a deadline. I find it's not just sitting down and tinkering anymore. It's not just having a bit of a dabble with some words. You're sitting down, and if I start slowing down, Daniel won't have pages to draw. And he's a fast artist. So I'm trying to make sure that when he handled in the pencils for like 11 to 15, I was like, oh, man, oh, I know I've already written the issue too, but I just feel like I've got to get further ahead. And I think it'll all go really well. But yeah, it does. It sticks in your head a little bit, which is kind of cool. So there's that heist, my story of the heist on a cryptozoological prison / zoo has been picked up. And we're currently at work on that with Arcana Studios. So it'll be coming out as a graphic novel there. I've got Shannon Ritchie as the artist. Kurt, your good friend Alandra Miller is on as colorist. I slipped her in and got her approved. So I'm looking forward to
nice.
That. Yeah, she knocked up a few pages for us, and they looked really good. I've said it too many times. I love her work. So
yeah, I actually got to see those. They look good. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have her on board. So she was really, really keen. And as we all know, the Brisson, he's gone from our lives. He's busy doing his own stuff. So I don't have a letterer on call for these new projects coming up. And so I had to fill this Brisson-shaped hole in my life. And so I went to Ed and I said, look, I have this project. It was like I was going to The Godfather. I was like, I'd love you to letter them. However, I know you probably can't, but I feel honor-bound to offer you first. And, you know, he made me kiss his ring and said, thank you, child. I am busy, but I appreciate the sentiment. And I give you blessing to go and hunt for other letterers. So then the letter, you know, the challenge came about, and I was talking to Clayton Cowles, who is a letterer at Marvel. He does Defenders and like 7 other different books. He's an awesome guy. Now, I wasn't able to land him, but he put me onto a friend of his, Brandon DeStefano, who is lettering Harvest coming up from Shadowline.
Oh, I can't.
Yeah, that book looks killer. And so Brandon and I started chatting, and he's an awesome dude. And so he's come on board to do the letters for Heist. And so I think that's going to work out really well. And so now I've scripted about halfway through the entire story. Shannon's got all the pages. We're just sort of waiting on him to sort of churn through the pencils and the inks. And So yeah, we're working on another deadline with that. Arcana is really interesting. I mean, Kurt, you've dealt with them before. They just sort of said, well, we'll solicit it when you're pretty much done. So there's no massive deadline, which I kind of dig, but it also means I have to be in charge of making sure that I work.
Yeah, the onus is on you then, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I can't be lazy about it. But they've been really cool, actually, to deal with. So I'm excited to bring that through. And I'm setting myself the goal to see if we can get it ready for, you know, around Emerald City next year, because why not have some synergy to the projects and be able to sell as much as possible. So that's going really well. Another project is, Kurt, you've been releasing Greenwake on Keenspot.
Yeah,
and a page a workday. Many people who listen here will know that I wrote a script for Greenwake, one that just never found scheduling time, and then unfortunately Greenwake ended. So this script sort of floated around for a while, and I was still so superbly happy with it. I finally had the brain explosion and asked Kurt if we could put it up on Keenspot. And Kurt, you made me kiss your ring, and you. Oh, that could be taken really dirty. Oh, that's a different ring. Shit. Anyway, you said we could put it up there, so I'm working with Nathan Uten, who's been doing the art on the pages, and we're about halfway through the issue at the moment with the pages, and they look unbelievable. He's not trying to channel Riley Rossmo, but he's trying to keep it congruent with that world. And Kurt, I've shared a few of those pages with you, and I don't know, I'm really happy with he's bringing the sort of creepiness to the page, but his storytelling chops are coming through. I think it's going to look spectacular. And so, I mean, it's going to be free online, so people can't really complain. It's a bit of a bargain. So hopefully it'll just add to the Greenwake mythos. And Kurt, I have to say thank you for letting us do that. I think
yeah, no problem. I mean, that's a script that I've been behind since day one. But, you know, just unfortunately, just the book was not – I think if the book had been selling like maybe 3 or 4 times what it was, we could have done whatever we wanted. But the true fact was it sold horrible. So, you know, this is the best I can offer.
I'm just stoked to still get to play with the script. And yeah, Nathan's putting together these pages that just look dynamite. He sent one through recently, and it's just a guy crawling down into a manhole. But Christ, it looked good. It just looked so damn good. He's absolutely nailing it. And Brandon DiStefano is going to letter that as well. And so he's trying to keep a sort of similar style to what Kelly Tindall was doing on Greenwake, so on the actual series. So that should be coming around in, I don't know, we got about a month, I guess, we start dropping those pages. It's not far off.
Yeah, we got, I think issue 5 starts on Monday. So you've got 4 weeks.
4 weeks. Excellent. Yeah. I can crack that whip. That sounds good. And outside, I mean, those are my big things at the moment, getting art coming in, checking lettering, all that sort of stuff. Outside of there, I'm doing up another pitch with Nathan. It's like a noir take on Philip K. Dick. Basically, it's relatively high concept, but I'm really digging the idea. So we're kicking that around. My old pitch, A Love Supreme. I've been in talks with an industry titan at a Titanic publisher who is very supportive of this project and is helping me out. And that's about all I can say at the moment. But I'm really keen on this project. I still back it 100%. And so hopefully I'll have a hand from somebody very powerful, and that will just get it just into the right hand. So that's going well. I did up
is
a writing.
Is it Stan Lee? Is that who it is?
Yes. Yeah. We're gonna. What's the publisher he's working with now? I think he's over at Boom. I'll take Boom definitely. Yeah. Me and Stan, we go way back.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I did up a writing ash can of a few of these short stories, and so I've been sending it off to some editors and emailing it to a few other editors at some publishers, only really editors that I'm already talking to. So I don't want to just cold call people with it, sort of ask them first and putting it in their hands. They've been pretty excited to read it. So it's just a little calling card to get my name on the top of their list. And I'm at a con next weekend. Scott Alley from Dark Horse is going to be in Melbourne. So I'm going to sit down with him and slap it in his hands. And yeah, it's going to be a really good opportunity. I mean, Australia never gets people out here. So I'm really keen to get to talk to, you know, Dark Horse and Scott and give them a few of my short stories that have been completed. It's been pretty busy. So I just find that, like, getting art in, making sure that if you need to tweak the art, that the updated file is the current file that you get in, and proofing letters, and once you actually start making comics, it gets fiddly, but damned if it isn't worth it when you see those pages in the end, I must say.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's been most of my progress. The rest of it's all just the usual stuff in the background.
Cool. Awesome. That sounds like we've all been up to a lot of shit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, busy. Okay, so I guess we'll move on to the actual meat of the chat, the process. So today's topic is self-promotion. What is absolutely vital, if not mandatory, within creator-owned comics? And what are the best ways that work for promoting each of your projects? So I guess, Kurt, since you have the most relevant experience, why don't you go ahead and share?
Sure. Well, I mean, self-promotion is... I find, like, I was really hesitant about Twitter at first, and that has been one tool that has really opened up a lot of opportunities for me. Twitter is something that it's, and I think we've talked about this before, just about the ability to use that and send links to your work, send links to, like, editors. It's just an example, I guess, is it Thomas Jane? Tom Jane? You know who that is, correct?
Yeah.
The actor. Well, he posted something about... post your favorite cover of the week and he'll retweet it and you might win something. But I didn't care about winning anything. I just wanted him to retweet it. So yeah. I just got him to retweet my cover for Grim Reaper 2.
Nice.
And it was just one of those things. Like, it was just a simple message to him. I sent him a link to the cover and he retweeted it. And, you know, he's got quite a huge following. So it's just one of those things that can start to really snowball to get exposure to your work. One thing that I've recently come into, and I don't think I've talked to on the show about this yet, is LinkedIn. And I've actually, since I've been preparing for my move to Vancouver, and I already do have a job lined up, but I want to start making some connections in the video game and television industry there. Because there's a huge, obviously huge community of both of those creative types that live there. And so I set myself up on LinkedIn, and I always thought it was just kind of this really kind of annoying. You just got all these updates from people all the time. You didn't know what the hell was going on with that website. And then I started to see like the real benefit in it, and I updated it. I put my brand new resume on there with all my comic projects and my video game projects and like awards that I've been nominated for. And then I just started going through and making connections and adding people that were like artists or, you know, computer coders or directors on video games. And I just started adding like 500 people, just as many people as I could. And I started to get a lot of people viewing my resume. And I'm still getting a lot of people viewing my resume as new people join up, or obviously people are looking for writers. And I actually have been in touch with about 4 or 5 people that are either in the film industry or in the video game industry that have said, you know, we're not hiring right now, but when you're in town, you know, get in touch. We'll go for a coffee and we'll talk shop, and you know, maybe we can get to know each other a little bit. And that was really awesome. I never actually expected that website to make those connections for me.
Expected to hear a success story about LinkedIn.
I know,
right? Jeez.
I know. It's actually really surprising, and a lot of the people that I'm connected to now, like when I first started, I started to see, especially with Day 21 Studios, who I'm working with, Sean McGaugh, who's my boss. He knows a lot of people, and so when I added him, I had like all these video game people and TV people that I never would have been able to have access to before. And yeah, I've got about 5 meetings set up when I'm there, so. It's going to be really good just to start networking and meeting other fellow creatives. So, I mean, self-promotion, you can take it in a few ways. You can talk about social media like Twitter, Facebook, but you can also like take your actual, just for you, your actual career, your writing career, and go on a place like LinkedIn and start meeting other people. And I mean, you have to make your profile look good, and you have to actually spend about an hour making it look a little bit more professional, because a lot of them look terrible.
An hour? No, I'm out. It's too much work.
Yeah, an hour is not worth your career. You're right.
exactly.
But, I mean, that's what I have to say. Like, social media is really important. And, I mean, you guys all use it as well. And, I mean, the three of us have all met through social media, through basically comic review websites and interview websites. And then we've all started kind of from that basis where now we're doing this show together, and you guys are already, your careers are starting to take off. It's pretty evident from when we first started doing the show almost a year ago. We started doing it in June last year. Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
We did our first show around June or July. Yeah. So like we're up to almost a year now. And so, I mean, we've all made such great progress, and that's all because we were very present online and in a lot of different capacities. So if you're really good at it, you can start to make a lot of really great connections.
The thing I'm starting to wonder is which social networks to sort of use. Like I really like Twitter. I think it is the ultimate sort of having fun, procrastinating, networking, showcasing tool. And so that's fine. But then do you need to also use Facebook, Google Plus, LinkedIn,
your own site, Tumblr?
And so I see some people that blanket it out there, but then which ones do you pick and choose?
I think it becomes oversaturated when you're using all of those. And
absolutely.
Especially if you... I don't know. When it comes to self-promotion for me now, I think that it's about getting to know people. And since I live in a city where it's very easy to meet lots of people in the industry, like I just happened to meet Ivan Brandon and I fixed his computer and spent like 2 days talking with him and just picking his brain and, you know, making those kind of connections. And I think for me have been really beneficial because, you know, especially if I'm going to have some kind of release party this October or in the future, you know, I can have people that, you know, have reputations and have, you know, are people to look to supporting, you know, my work. And I think Kurt talked about this before, but also getting to know retailers is huge, especially if your book is going through a small press. It's really important to just know who's out there who is interested in independent comics and interested in creator owned. I know that Sean Welch at Third Eye Comics reached out to me about Southern Dog because he'd seen the cover that I'd posted, and he said, send me material because Steve here at the shop wants to help promote it. And I mean, that's a shop I don't know if I'm ever going to visit that shop in Maryland, but I know who they are, and it's great that they've reached out. And you know, but I think Twitter, honestly, is the best and easiest and most conducive way to just breaking new ground with new people.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, and you just mentioned Third Eye Comics. That was all set up for me through Twitter, where they flew me out and did a signing there, and they were amazing. They're just amazing people at that store. And that was all through just some private messages on Twitter and then following through with email. You know, I totally agree with you. And about the oversaturation, you know, I recently signed up for Tumblr because I saw a lot of people, Alessio, he's been doing some really cool process stuff on there for basically whenever issue comes out for Grim Reaper, he about 1 or 2 days before he does, he puts up a few of the preview pages, but then he shows his process, like the black and whites, the inks, and then, oh, and really? Then the colors. And he's been putting that on his Tumblr, and he's been getting a lot of, I guess, what do they call it? Reblogging or whatever.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah, I know, I'll join up on that. And I've been doing a little bit, but honestly, do I have time for that? Like, I really got to sit back and be like, what am I doing? Like, I've already got, you know, a Facebook presence for my name, and then for each project that I'm doing, which I'm actually going to stop doing from now on. I'm just going to all point it towards my main Facebook fan page.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I'm basically diluting myself by having all these different fan sites. And especially because I do all the work anyway. I do all of the updating and put up all the previews. It's a lot of extra work for me that I don't have to do. And that's all been a learning process. But I definitely can say that the less you can do and the less avenues people have, they can just go to like two or three main sites to get all the Ryan K. Lindsay they need, the better. You know, like for me, I have my blog, and this is basically my plan, is to have my blog, my Twitter presence, and then my Facebook page, and that's it.
Yeah.
Good. When I look to other people, whether it's a creator that I'm interested in their work or a possible co-creator that I want to collaborate with, I want to see – I generally would prefer to see a Twitter account because, I mean, from there you can find so much more out about them. But it also gives you an idea of, I don't know, them as a person as well as them and their work. I mean, I just went to a con last weekend and I got to meet a bunch of people who I only previously knew through Twitter. And it was really interesting how many of them said the same two things about me that they knew only through Twitter. And it's one, that I'm positive, and two, that I work my ass off and I'm writing all the time.
And three, you're a redhead.
Hey, don't say that on here. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Damn rumor. Stupid. Starring. Anyway, you've ruined it. No, it was really good to know that, like, what I put up there, people, and a few people were like, oh, you know, your Twitter's really inspirational because it shows me that, you know, I should be working and I should be writing, and I always see you on there writing. And I was like, well, that's good. That's the sort of thing that I want to put out there. I mean, I would assume if I go for a job at bloody DC, surely they would check your Twitter feed. And it's, I think it would be really interesting to see what they say. And so if I'm collaborating with somebody, I'm usually friends with them on Twitter. And so you check out what they're saying. So I think that that is a really good, just, it's good because you get to know the creator and not just their work. And I think in comics, especially, that's of such importance. And then from there, I think you have to have a site of some kind. It doesn't have to be mammoth. It doesn't have to have forums on there or anything like that. But I want to be able to see, especially for artists, I want to be able to see their work and get a bit of an idea. And when you see an artist who's like, oh, I've got some stuff, but I don't really have it up online, I don't know how they're going to get the word out about themselves. I don't know how that's possible at all.
Especially in a day and age when it's like so accessible now. Like there's not really an excuse anymore.
No, you can just go to WordPress or Blogspot and you can just set one up for free, or Tumblr. I mean, I've been using Tumblr this year as more just a brain dump. At the end of every day, I take a photo of my desktop and I just write a little update on what I did that day. And it's not really for anybody else. It's just to keep me on track. And I like, at the end of the day, I usually sit in bed on my phone and type it up. And it takes like 3-4 minutes. And it just reminds me, oh yeah, I did do some stuff today. And that's affirming. But I don't know, if anybody else stumbles across my Tumblr, they're basically just going to think I work all the time, which is awesome because that's the sort of trickery I want to spread out there. So I don't know. But other than that, like Google+, I just don't get it. Facebook is, if anyone ever looked at my Facebook, that all they're going to see is like baby photos and my kid talking and stuff like that. It's, I don't use that for comic networking. I use that because my family lives far and wide across Australia, and it's easier to put a little video up there than it is to, I don't know, burn it onto a disc and send it through the mail. Like, screw that. I use that more personally, whereas Twitter is very much, it's selling the brand of Ryan K. Lindsay, if you want to sound really wanky about it.
No, that's and I absolutely what you have do. To do, though. It's branding yourself. And with creator-owned comics, that's half the job, if not more, than actually creating. Like, the time I've spent writing a script is probably a third of the time I'm online trying to get people to notice it through, you know, if I get artwork up and I'm trying to get it out. I mean, that's the job, really, with creator-owned comics. And that's something that I've thought a lot about as far as self-promotion with just publishers. Like, you know, I've really come to realize I don't know what someone like Image nowadays, what they're ultimately offering, because, you know, they're not going to promote. I mean, they have a presence, which helps, obviously. But, you know, when I mean, this is going to go into a little bit of how I'm going to close the show, but it's like thinking about publishers and being kind of dependent on them to get your word out is not any way to go about creating a project. Like, you should just create a project, which is why I was so impressed with Rachel's book, was that she just went ahead and did it. And that's the best self-promotion, is just having work. Because, like, I realize I have all these pitches, and they're pointless. They're absolutely pointless, because I can't go to a convention, get a table, and then sell pitches.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy them. I have to sell a completed story, whether it be a first issue, whether it be a complete book. And, you know, that's the best way to promote it. I'm starting to see the validity in self-publishing if you have to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I do with anyone who's working outside of the big two. I follow them on, say, Twitter, and you do, if they're decent people and they've got good ideas and they're friendly and you get a sense of them as a person, I'm more likely to buy their work. If someone on Twitter is just a dick all the time, or is completely judgmental or whatever, it doesn't sour me completely, because the work is what I'm after, but it does. It just turns you that few degrees away, and you may then find something else instead. I'd much rather collaborate with positive people as well, that sort of get in there and are just, you know, enjoying life. What we do is fun. It's making comics. It's hard work, but I mean, we're all only doing it because it's a dream. And the fact now that we're doing our dream has got to say something, that damn well enjoy it. Like, really get a buzz out of every moment that you're scripting and checking all the artwork and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. What? Just one thing we get before I move on to the roundtable. The one thing that I had an experience with, and I don't know if, I mean, this was
pretty sure it was for Grim Reaper number one. Might have been a bit sooner, but on the iFanboy forums, every time they put up the comics, you can click your poll and then you can go in and comment on the individual comics. And I try to be the very first person to comment on there, and then I make it a very strong point to answer every single post that goes on there. And I mean, there's two reasons behind it. Two, I like just to like talk to the people that are buying my books because they're giving me money. they are supporting my career directly by giving me their $350 or whatever it is for my comic. And what's the least that I can do? I can say, hey, thanks so much. Or like, hey, and I hope you enjoy the book. And, but it also brings a lot of presence when you can see there's like, I think for Peter Panzerfaust number one, we got like 70 comments on there. And it was just because I was responding to every single person. And there was actually a few people who actually came in there and said, you know, I hadn't even heard of this book. And, you know, after reading the text, it didn't sound like something I'd be into, but I'm buying this book because you responded to every single person in here. And I think that's, you know, that level of accessibility or that you showing that you have that much passion for getting people to buy your book. I actually had a really funny exchange. And if anybody who read the Grim Reaper thread from the iFanboy will probably know what happened. But there was a conversation that happened where one guy refused to buy the book because him and Joey Esposito had some kind of falling out. I don't really know all the details. But basically, he wouldn't buy it strictly for that fact because Joey Esposito had the backup. And I said, I emailed him and I said, just send me your email. I want to talk to you. So he sent me his email and I said, if I give you issue one, the PDF for free without the backup by Joey Esposito, will you promise to buy like, you know, issues 2, 3, and 4? And he emailed me back and he said, you know what? I never ever expected a creator to actually do that. He's like, you know what? I'll put beside my beef with Joey Esposito, I will buy your series issues 1 through 4 just because you've gone out of your way to convince me to buy the book. Nice. Now, you can't do that with everyone or else you would want to die. It would be way too much work. But I think
people will figure it out and start complaining just to get free stuff from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that I've announced how that went down. but I think there is like that's good self-promotion. If you're like for me, that was a genuine thing. Like I really want him to buy the book. And yeah. I was disappointed that he wasn't willing to give it a shot just because he had a disagreement with somebody. And for me, that was like for him, just he just kind of felt that connection that I was really wanting him to try out my material. And so that has been a huge part of my self-promotion is just being like just like another guy and being trying to be like just I'll email you just to have a chat. Or and I've had people email me and say like, hey, here's a fan mail, like I know you'll never respond to me. Well, of course I'm going to respond to you. It may take a week, but I will. And I think if you really want to connect with your fans, that is a huge part of it, is just kind of being accessible to the people that are making your career possible.
Well, Curtis, I wanted to ask you, how was the experience with the whole Reddit thread that you were on?
Reddit's really good. I mean, I haven't had as much response as, you know, like I think Justin Jordan, he had a lot of people on there. I mean, it's just because his book was really popular. So I mean, I get quite a few responses on there and some really good questions. And I always check in there once in a while. Sometimes people will like, I know for Peter Panzerfaust issue 2, one guy posted a thread how he would never buy it again because that scene where Felix murders that Nazi, he's like, this book is just too dark for me. And so I went on there, I just posted, I'm like, well, you know, I'm just asking that you trust me. There's a reason that he does that and it's going to pay off long term. There's a plan for every single character and every single action that's happening. And he responded to me, said, oh, he's like, thanks so much for taking the time to respond to me. I'll check out the next issue. So like just like being active on those places. And sometimes you can just pop in really obscure forums their response is always kind of funny because they just do not expect, because they'll bitch about you. They have no idea you're reading. So I've gone in there and just been like, one guy just was totally bitching about one of my books. And I went in there and I was just like, hey man, you know, I'm really sad to hear you didn't like my work. And, but you know what? Thanks for trying out something new. I really appreciate it. And that's what independent comics needs. And you're just like, oh, you know, I wasn't like, I didn't really hate it that much, you know, I was just, yeah. But anyway, that's just fun and games, but self-promotion. Yeah. Like it's definitely especially as an indie creator, you have to do that. So, keep that in mind. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of your time, but you have to do it.
And we've seen what you've done, Kurt. So Jeremy, you and I, we now know what the next year of our lives is going to entail. Sounds like a lot of like forum trolling.
Yeah, forum trolling.
Rad, can't wait.
All right, let's move on to the roundtable, guys. We want to wrap a bit earlier today because we're all busy guys. So let's get on to the roundtable. Today we're talking about getting published and what are the pros and cons of obtaining a publisher support in your creator-owned comic, and how does it affect your process, if at all? So we're talking about pitching and or following through with projects. Ryan, why don't you kind of share your thoughts on that topic?
Getting published, I mean, there's that instant moment of validation where you're like, oh man, somebody liked it. They really liked it. And then you jump around, you do a little dance, you know, and then you start thinking about, all right, now I actually have to like kick down. And I sort of mentioned this earlier, you've got to be your own master. And most of us are operating, I mean, the three of us are sort of operating in situations where we have to make sure we keep ourselves on task. And so that's been the big thing. It's been like, all right, this is real. This is, other people are depending on it. I had that thought in my head the other day where I was just like, what if I just dropped off the map and just didn't write that next script? And it'd be terrible. Like, these people have faith in you and have given you responsibility. And so now it puts a whole different sphere over what you're doing. You start, it's not just playing with toys anymore. It's business. And the business is still fun, but you've got to you've got to get over that moment of glee and be like, oh, awesome, this, you know, publisher's going to publish it, and then go, all right, well, now I need to make it so they have something to publish. And I think that it's that shift, that very moment where you just turn over on a project and go, all right, now it's, you know, balls to the wall, we're getting serious. It's interesting and it's fun and it's a little bit scary, I think. I don't know, Kurt, did you ever feel that with some of your projects? I mean, when you first got Green Wake and Intrepid's picked up with Image, was there this sort of moment where it's like, all right, now we're playing for more than pennies. It's it's big business.
Yeah, I mean, and I've talked about this quite often with Intrepids especially. That was the same kind of what you described, Ryan. You know, like getting when you get that initial email where it's like, Eric Stevenson said, yeah, we want to do Intrepids. It's like, whoa, and it doesn't even almost feel real. You're just like kind of shaking yourself, like, is this actually happening? And then once you kind of get over that moment of glee, then you're like, now what the fuck do I do?
Exactly.
And you're just – it literally is this moment where there's a transition of like, I didn't expect to get here. Now where do I go from here? And it really is for me and for Scott, we really had to rely on a lot of our, you know, our friends and people that were published for just getting the basics of like how to get this book together and we didn't know anything about how it was supposed to happen. And then it becomes very serious because not only you basically have been building for that moment and you never expect it to come. And then when it does, you're just not ready. You're like, oh, okay, well, oh crap, I have to write the whole series now. And you know, that just changes the game totally. But you know, the pros of that is, like you said, Ryan, there's somebody saying this is good enough and we think it's strong enough that our company is willing to bank their name on it.
Yeah.
And that is a huge confidence booster because, quite frankly, you're going to need that when you're putting that rest of that project together, because every day is like, I am way over my head at this point. And you just have to keep remembering they believe in this project and they are putting their brand on it. So just get the work done.
Yeah. And I find then the team that you've assembled around you, once Heist got picked up, I sent the email around to Shannon, the artist, Delangelo, the colorist, and Brandon, the letterer. And I was just like, all right, I've spoken to you each sort of individually. Here's the round table now. We're making comics. We're making this comic. Let's go forward. I'm so super passionate about this project. I love the art, the colors, the letters. Let's enjoy the rest of 2012 just kicking this thing's ass and getting it done. And so I just want to get this positivity to bleed onto the page through myself, through my co-creators, and just make sure that everything is pumped. And I want to make sure that it's open if they've got any questions or if they've got any problems and deadlines or whatever, inspiration. We have to be a bit of a family unit and really put it together. And it's fun that you can then form that bond, which you sort of do when you put together a pitch. But it's like putting together a pitch is boot camp, and then all of a sudden you're stepping onto the beaches of Normandy with everybody else once you get picked up, and you've just got to sort of run, and it's really it's a strong emotional feeling and situation.
I think that you know, it's good to have that goal of getting published, but I think that's, you know, it's really important that it doesn't become the only goal. I think getting published should be a motivation, but I think that if you put getting published as a goal, then I think, you know, Ryan, what you're talking about, you know, writing in that passion into the work and inspiring the people that are collaborating with you. Like, if you're just focusing on getting something printed, it takes the fun out of everything. It takes the wind out of your sails. And I've experienced that with multiple projects I've worked on, because that's what I was focused on, was just getting published. And I realized that, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I've linked up with two awesome artists, Alex Diotto and Selena Golding, who want to finish the book regardless of publication, because when I wrote the thing, I wasn't thinking about getting published. I wanted to write a story that they wanted to draw. And, you know, that translates. And I think that's, it's important. It's a delicate balance, but it's important to keep perspective and on what you're trying to do in the end, really.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you want to add that validity to the project, and however you go about doing that, whether it's getting it set up for a Kickstarter, whether it's getting it set up to do some ash cans at a con, whether it's getting it set up for Bloody Image Comics, whatever the case may be, you want to make sure that, I don't know, I just want to be making sure I'm nitro injecting every project for whatever reason it may be. And I mean, the story of Love Supreme that I'm still working sort of with Mal on, that I'm super keen on this, but he runs a comic store by day. He's a husband. He doesn't have time to do it with nothing as a possible end goal. And I don't know, I'm interested to see, like, on Twitter, they're the people that say, you know, artists should work on back end, and then there's people on Twitter that'll say, you know, artists should be paid up front. And I mean, we've talked about it enough, and I'm not raising that argument right now, but we've all been really lucky to work with artists that believe in what we've got. And I think finding one that it depends on their level of commitment as to how far they can really go with it before they say anything is a real powerful set of trust to come through.
Yeah.
Is that, Kurt, do you have rats gnawing on your dead body on your side? Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, it's definitely a prairie thing in middle Canada. That's how we keep our skin clean.
Oh, that's a nasty image. I love it. Put it into a book. Oh, man, with Nathan, he's just moved. I can't remember where, in America, and he's working on these Green Wake pages. And as he's moved somewhere, he says there's like 1,000 frogs literally out the back of this property that he lives on.
What?
And it's creeping the shit out of him. Yeah, so he's just moved, and he's like getting into these pages, and all of a sudden just this echoing frog noise is scaring him just a little bit. It's awesome.
It's funny, when I was in Seattle – for the Emerald City Comic Con, I stayed at my friend's place there for a couple days, and they live on this property that's like an acreage, but there's a really boggy swamp just like cut into the corner of their lot. And at night, it was like, because it's in the middle of nowhere, so there's like no traffic noise, it's just dead quiet, and just like it was so loud with frogs and just like hundreds and hundreds of frogs. And so my friend was like, she's like, you think that's bad? If you walk back around the perimeter line of the property past that bog and just walk by that area, just, you can't even hear the person next to you talking, it's so loud. And I was like, that's intense.
That's insane.
I know. I never did do it. I was too freaked out.
Why'd they turn on you especially and just be like, no, you've exposed our secret, Kurt. You're going down.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, but with the talk of getting published, I mean, it's an interesting point you raised, Jeremy, where it shouldn't be the end goal, but I mean, it depends what you mean by getting published. In the end, what I think it is producing a comic, whether that's through a production house or not.
Most people think getting published is having a publisher back, and you get that publisher icon on your cover. But I like your distinction. I think that's how it should be. Getting published is creating work, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that you can then share with others, and whether it's a web comic or whether it's small press, large press, whatever, as long as finishing the project is really what I see about getting published.
Oh yeah, and I think anybody listening should know that you should just complete your projects. Just do it. That's you're going to learn a lot from it. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to have something. You can be left with something to show people. I mean, it's just the best way to go.
absolutely. I mean, with you, Kurt, I mean, do you have a next sort of step in mind, or do you like, I mean, Jim Valentino has openly sort of said he'll accept most ideas from you. You're sort of his golden child at the moment. Are you enjoying that space?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome. But that said, okay, and that's one thing I kind of wanted to add to that. I guess we should probably wrap up soon. But that's one thing I wanted to mention. When you do have a publisher, and I feel I'm really lucky to have Jim Valentino basically on my back, like just at my back. He'll support my projects. And that's not to say I get everything greenlit. I've pitched him 3 projects since Debris, and he's turned them all down. And here's the thing. And this is the reason that he turned them down. He said, Debris is going to be your best and biggest book. He's like, you have to follow that up with something that's even better. And all these 3 projects are good, but they're not better. And it needs to be a better project. So he really is helping me. Like he's just being honest by saying, you know, these projects aren't what you need to be doing right now. Give me something else, something that I know will be a better book for you. And that is that's an amazing tool to have, an amazing avenue to like really further your career, and that's one thing that has definitely for me paid off, and he's really helped, I think, focus my career, and he's really put me out there and put a lot of his, I guess, his dollars into what I'm doing. But I really do agree with Jeremy with your sentiment. If you're having trouble getting published, then just do it because you love to do it. And we kind of touched on that in the last episode that we did. We talked about we write because we have to. And I really believe in that. And Jeremy, I'm really proud that you have just said, you know what, I've kind of lost my focus about why I'm doing this. And we talked quite a bit during that period, and you had come to a point where you were almost ready just to give up. And we had the conversation, and you just kind of came to it on your own. Like, you know what, I'm just going to do it because I want to get these stories out there. And I'm really proud of you, because that's a scary thing to do, that just to invest that time. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with it, but you don't care. You just want to write the story. And that's a great move.
Thanks. And that's what it was, because I think I had reservations and this preconceived notion of self-publishing, which is, it has some negative connotation to an extent of just anybody can do it, and you'll be lumped in with like mediocre work. But honestly, I can't really focus on that. It's pointless to focus on that stuff, because that's out of my control. Like I just got to put out the best thing I can, and if people like it, you know, that's great. But just get it out there.
Exactly.
I do like that all 3 of us are sort of working with a variety of smaller publishers. And I mean, Kurt, you've got the webcomic work that you do, and Jeremy, you're working with 215, and I've got a thing with Action Lab, and I really find it invigorating to work with these smaller houses, that you get really hands-on sort of with the people in editorial and the way that it's going to be published. And I know when it comes crunch time, we're all going to be really pimping these projects and putting them out there ourselves. And it's nice not to just, I mean, so many aspiring creators really just seem to sit there and go, oh, well, I want to land a book with Image. And, well, if I can't with Image, then don't worry about it. And I don't get that mindset. I think it's, if you're passionate, you put it out there. And we've all spoken about that before. And I don't know, I'm really excited to work with Action Lab and put this ongoing out there, and it's trying something different. Maybe it's not going to pay off my mortgage with the sales of issue 1, and that's fine. Like, that's not the goal. The goal is to, you know, have a really good story out there. So I think it's really cool that all 3 of us do that.
Definitely. Jeremy, you should probably close us out. We are coming up to the end.
All right. Here we go. Comic Book Wednesday. You know what I'm talking about. This is our day. While everyone else waits months to years for the next big film or book, we quench our thirst for excellent entertainment every week. The excitement and joy of heading to your local shop to pick up your pull list to read the next installment of your favorite title is indescribable. And I'm not only talking about the ones backed by the big-name publishers. I visited my shop last night for a release party for 2 creators that you've probably never heard of. That's okay, because the best shops support independent talent because they love comic books unconditionally. However, as comic book creators with personal/professional deadlines, book cancellations, the stress of creating more engaging content each month, pitching your heart and soul to editors, and the copious amounts of bad reviews and rejection letters, it's challenging to remember why we got involved in this bizarre industry in the first place. Working in creator-owned comics is one of those things that takes pure heart. Nothing else matters, not even getting a green light from a publisher. That's right, I said it. Mind you, I am in no way pioneering this idea. the one and only Alan Moore was candidly caught on video at a book signing spouting this exact sentiment. To quote, "Getting published is no big thing. If you write every day, then you're a writer." Hearing this from a man that redefined the genre reminds me of the importance to never lose sight of your artistic voice. To do so results in inevitable failure. I've spent the last 5 years creating comics that I love, stories that I believe people will enjoy. Somewhere along the way, though, I got swept up by the allure of getting greenlit by the biggest comic book publishers in the industry. Eventually, it's all I thought about, and it consumed me in the worst of ways. What finally saved me from drowning in a sea of rejection letters and empty praises from editors that had no plans in publishing my work was sitting down to write for no one but myself. There is true value in creating art without anyone's approval. The irony is that right now, the big-name publishers are almost exclusively looking for these types of creators as they demonstrate a level of determination and skill that sets them apart from the rest. The Process Podcast has always and will continue to be a focus on the craft of comic book creation. Egos, false hopes, and delusions of grandeur need not apply. A pitch is an idea. A completed comic book, however, is a fully conceptualized story. I don't know about you, but I just want to contribute to New Comics Wednesday, and to think I needed permission from a publisher makes me laugh all the way to my shop.